You're listening to Shift in Action, a program of wisdom media and spirited exchange offered through the Institute of Noetic Sciences. For more information, visit www.shiftinaction.com.
Equation and amplifies the other. We somehow enter that aspect of ourselves which is represented by the field of consciousness, and we can experience in that context anything that lies between the body ego and the creative principle itself. I mean the total field of cosmic energy, and then any forms that lie in between the archetypal realms and so on. Then we have the more direct observations that relate to the possibility of survival. The most obvious is the near-death experience as it is studied by thanatology. And there are many people will be talking about it, and I think it's also generally known. So I will not go into this. But I will just add that we see, for example, in psychedelic sessions, in holotropic sessions, and in the study of people who are in spiritual emergencies or psycho-spiritual crisis, we see also near-death experiences that happen at the time when people are reliving past life-threatening situation, let's say car accident from the past being relived, and we see the same kind of pattern of near-death experiences in that particular context. Now the most interesting aspect, because it is verifiable, is naturally the out-of-body experience and the disembodied perception. Again, this is something that we can observe not just in relation to biological crisis, biological demise or a life-threatening situation, but we can observe them independently. Again, in all these three situations, psychedelic sessions, holotropic sessions, and spontaneous psycho-spiritual crisis, people can have occasionally out-of-body experiences with accurate perception of the environment. So the idea here is if consciousness can operate independently of the body during our lifetime, why couldn't be also true after we die? The next important area of observations is direct experiences of astral realms, direct experiences of communication with deceased friends and relatives, and direct experiences of what has been described as the Bardo realms. I don't have time to give you examples, but I published in the books several examples where people had experiences of people who died, and there was a certain aspect about the communication that could be independently tested. I described that a friend of mine who died appeared in his wife's psychedelic session, and as part of this communication asked her to return a book that he didn't have a chance to return, gave the name of the book, the name of the friend, and described the shelf in the bookstore in his study. And when we went, we actually followed the instructions and returned the book. There was another situation where somebody experienced an astral realm, and there were presences and that were sort of asking for things. And there was one presence that gave a telephone number. His name was Ladislav, and he wanted a message to be delivered to his parents that he is well taken care of, and gave the name of the parents and the phone number. And when I called, they actually had a son of that name whom they had lost 3 weeks earlier. My friend Thelma Moss, this is even wilder, she wrote, she's dead now, she wrote under the name, this escapes me now, it was called Myself and I, Constance Newland, I think it was, a sequence of psilocybin sessions that she had, and in this process an entity appeared who called himself Benjamin Franklin, and then outside of those sessions, then in following years, she could actually call on this entity. It would appear in her everyday life, and she would use this entity as a consultant. She told me, for example, that she was doing some experiment with measuring reactions to electrical stimulation, and she needed some information, and she asked Benjamin Franklin and got a reference to a specific book by Becker, who was working with electric circuits. So out of all the books of the library, she got the book and the page. So there are many experiences of communication with deceased being, but one of, you know, probably hundreds renders itself to some kind of objective testing, and we find this incredible, mind-blowing synchronicity surrounding it. And then we come to the next category, which has maybe I should mention something else in relation to the Bardo experiences, that we had a large study at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center where we did psychedelic sessions with over 200 cancer patients as part of a preparation for death. And we had several instances where the patients would have psychedelic sessions with us, and then as their disease progressed, they would have actual near-death experience. In one instance, for example, it was an obstructed ureter, an operation, and a cardiac arrest during the operation with a near-death experience. And then these people then compared their real near-death experience with the previous psychedelic sessions. And they said this was the same territory, and that they were very glad that they had the experiences, because in some sense this was not new for them, that they somehow had some familiarity with the territory. So it makes us think about Aldous Huxley, who, after he had some mescaline and LSD experiences, wrote the little booklet Heaven and Hell. He has this brilliant insight that heaven and hell are, you know, very real places, only they describe states in non-ordinary states of consciousness. It's not something that competes with the knowledge of the astronomers, or something that you can check with telescopes, or you certainly cannot find hell by digging under the ground. But somebody can be here with us and be in heaven or hell in an altered state of consciousness. That's not incompatible with being in Chicago, I mean, either of them. And finally, the last category is the category of past life experiences, where people in different forms of non-ordinary states, again, sometimes spontaneously, sometimes with psychedelics, sometimes with breathing, rebirthing, and other contexts, some forms of primal therapy, people suddenly find themselves catapulted into another century, into another culture. They experience some very powerful episodes, usually highly emotionally charged. They frequently discover some deep connection with their present life. They suddenly see that certain of their present problems, fears, attractions, idiosyncrasies, even psychosomatic and emotional problems, phobias, you know, pains and so on, suddenly seem to be related to the experience they are having. They seem to be anchored in another century. And if they complete this experience, you see emotional, psychosomatic healing, you see dramatic changes in their interpersonal relations, and you see frequently very, very amazing synchronicities. Let's say the person has a past life experience and they resolve their relationship with another person who is currently part of their life, and they feel different about that person. But if you study it, you find out that at the same time, sometimes within minutes, something important happens in the life of the other person that also changes that person's attitude to this protagonist. So those are some amazing experiences that show that there is a really deep relevance to these experiences. And they are kind of what we would call experiences sui generis, of their own kind. They belong to their own category. They are not some fantasies. They cannot be explained as something that we make up from our childhood material or something of that kind. Now, just in conclusion, I'd like to say something that I feel is very important in relation to past life experiences, which is to separate the experiential evidence from the interpretation. What I described up to this point, in my opinion, are facts. In other words, everybody who would be doing work with non-ordinary states will see these phenomena, will see past life experiences with these dynamics, with these characteristics. Now, the interesting question is, is this a proof that we lived before? Is this a proof for the continuity of the same unit of consciousness? And obviously that isn't. You see, this is then we are in the territory or in the category of interpreting what is happening. To understand what I'm saying is, you think about objects falling, which is an observational fact. Now, theory of why it's happening, the explanation is something different. And if you go through history, you'll find different stories. If you lived at the time of Aristotle, you know, the earth was the center of the universe, everything wanted to be at the center of the universe, and this is why objects are falling. And then comes Descartes and Galileo and Newton, and suddenly you have this mysterious force of gravity that acts instantly over distances. And then comes Einstein and says there's nothing around like gravity, you know, it's the time-space is bent, it was the presence of mass, and so on. And then other people talk about gravitons, and, 10 years from now we might have another theory. So those are theories, those are attempts to interpret those facts. And there are at least three different interpretations that I can think about. The first one being, this means that we really survive as an individual unit of consciousness. There is continuity. Now, I would say it's a damn good one. It's certainly far superior to the kind of mainstream approach that thinks that this is a nonsense. It's nothing interesting there. Christopher Beige said that scientists who think that there's nothing interesting to explore in the realm of reincarnation are either uninformed, they don't know all these facts that we're talking about, or thick-headed. I mean, if they... So this is one theory. This kind of interpretation, that this means actually survival of the individual unit of consciousness, in the Indian yogic literature would be considered a kind of a folklore, sort of low-level interpretation of the facts. Reincarnation is not a belief, it is a pragmatic effort to theoretically explain the kinds of events that I was talking about. Now, according to the higher Hindu teachings, there is only one entity that incarnates, and that is Brahman. Anytime you see the universe in terms of some smaller separate units, you're still under the influence of Maya, of the sort of world illusion. In other words, you haven't gone far enough in your understanding of the nature of reality, because then you would end up with a situation where there is one creative principle, Brahman, that is represented in you as Atman, so you're identical with that person. So you continue existing as the total field of creative conscious energy. You would not sort of opt for some particular person, whether it's a body ego or whether it is a karmic chain of lives. And there is a possibility in between, which again is discussed by Christopher Beige, who talks about the oversoul, which is basically a field of all of human consciousness, very much like what Sheldrake describes as the morphogenetic field of the soul of the species. And that is that incarnates, that kind of sends out these incarnate entities. In that context, the incarnate entities forget who they are, where they come from, to have the full human experience. And then, and this is the major difference, at death we are totally cancelled. I mean, we just dissolve back into the oversoul, but what will be floating around are the bits and pieces of undigested experience, usually highly emotionally pitched, where consciousness somehow got stuck. And these are then used as a building material for new incarnating entities. So when you are incarnating, it's like getting a handful of cards. You get sort of some stuff to work with, which is exactly the way it tends to come in these states. You get bits and pieces, usually highly emotionally charged parts of the life rather than a whole reliving of a whole life. So I'm out of time. I have to end here. Thank you very much for coming. And I have some. We can end here. And if some of you would like to stay, I would have some slides from the Books of the Dead, which I'd be happy if we can. Can we do it? Do it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this offering from the Shift in Action Partners program and would like to sample more. Partners of the Institute of Noetic Sciences gain access to a weekly stream of inspiration, wisdom, media, and spirited exchange. The program includes live weekly teleseminars with visionaries who are lighting the way forward: Marilyn Schlitz, Dean Radin, Bellevue Rooks, Larry Dossey, Candace Pert, Brian Swim, and many more. Our live teleseminars are then added to an extensive archive of audio and video on our website at www.shiftinaction.com, with new offerings each week from teachers like Marianne Williamson, Edgar Mitchell, and Louisa Teach. The site offers the latest in community-building software that allows you to engage every piece of content as a focal point for education, exchange, and action. Join us in exploring the frontiers of consciousness.